Well, we've tried to come to grips with this John Gruden story ourselves here on the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. We've been waiting anxiously to talk to our next guest, who will give us all the opinion and information that we need. Amy Trask, former Raiders CEO, CBS Sports analyst, kind enough to join us online right now. Amy, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for inviting me to join you for the conversation.
Yeah, well, let's just start at the beginning. What did you think when you saw the contents of those emails from John Gruden?
Oh, an overwhelming number of things. It wasn't just one particular thing, I thought. The contents were horrifying. They were horrific, horrendous, heinous. I like alliteration, so I'm using all H words. And I will add heartbreaking, because not only was the content just horrific, but that it was, the news broke on the anniversary of Al's death was very, very poignant. Al, an NFL owner who had refused to play games in the segregated South, such that those games were moved, and did more for diversity and inclusiveness than any other league owner, team owner. Very poignant that the news broke on his death, the anniversary of his death.
You were one of the first people I thought about, Amy, when this story broke and again it unfolded, and because of what the Raiders represented under Al Davis. You're part of that. Art Schell's part of that. Tom Flores is part of that. As you said, refusing to play in segregated stadiums. Al was a renegade in many ways, and many of them, very, very good and progressive ways. For somebody who, and again, I know your identity is tied up in some ways with that team and with Al Davis and with that kind of, that part of the Raiders, it must have been heartbreaking for you.
Well, it was, but, I'm not the subject of it, if you will. It should be heartbreaking for everybody. And I'm not, I thank you for your concern and I thank you for your kind comments. But what was contained in this emails, and yes, they were in emails, but that means they were in his heart, and those were his beliefs. And, you don't put something in an email like that unless you are confident that the person to whom you are sending it shares those beliefs, or at a minimum, isn't going to challenge you or disagree with them. So, yes, they were the subject of emails, which shows us what was in John's heart and his mind, but it also shows us about the recipient, and I believe there were a couple of the emails that went to a group and the recipients. So, that people think those things and believe those things is just absolutely horrifying.
I understand it's been a while since you've been in that organization, and, that Raiders team no longer even plays in Oakland, but How do you view Mark Davis's role in all of this, and your understanding of their potential culpability?
Well, I don't believe, or let me state it that I would find it very, very difficult to believe, troubling to believe, that had he known that those were John's views, that he would have hired John. It's hard for me to believe that someone would know those were someone's views and hire them anyway, meaning Mark. That said, the organization learned of those emails on a Friday and took no action until the following Monday when they became public. And I find that troubling. It also calls into question whether the organization would have done anything had they not become public.
What can you tell us about Mark Davis? Because, I know a lot about Al, but I don't know a whole lot about Mark Davis.
Yeah, I'm not going to dive into that. I worked for Al for almost 30 years. I intersected briefly with Mark when he took over the team before I opted to leave. So that's not something I feel qualified to discuss.
Okay, fair enough. Where does this, Amy, these were a handful of what were hundreds and thousands of emails that were uncovered during this investigation, and not an investigation of John Gruden, but an investigation of the Washington football team and Dan Snyder. It's interesting that these emails were leaked by somebody, that these are the ones that came out. But it does kind of feel like Pandora's box here, does it not?
Sure. I don't know who leaked these. It was immediately assumed by many people that the league leaked them. I didn't buy that at the time. I still don't necessarily buy that. I don't know who leaked them, but wow, 650,000 emails. The lawyer part of my brain immediately thought how much it would cost someone in legal fees to have a lawyer go through 650,000 emails. And, you know, as we've seen, additional emails, also horrifying, are being, leaked, disseminated, whatever word you want to use. And I don't know that we've seen the end of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're coming out in dribs and drabs. And yeah, it's a like a never-ending news story. Do you think the NFL would be well advised to just open the door, have full transparency, and just get those emails out there? Like, what do you think happens next as far as the releasing of these emails?
Well, I like your use of the word transparency, because as a general rule, as a general proposition, I believe in transparency. I feel strongly about that. I think that transparency is really important, not only in business, but in other things. That said, very hard to comment because I don't know what else is in those emails. So I do think transparency as a general proposition is a good idea. I also believe that unless the league knows how these are all getting out and can put an end to that, the league has to assume more are going to get out. Now, the National Football League Players Association and the lawyers representing the women that have sued the Washington football team have both made strong requests to see the emails, and we shall see how the league proceeds.
It does raise enormous questions about that investigation, though, doesn't it? That was concluded in, over the summer. There was no written report. It was an oral report. A fine was levied against the team, but no details. And again, I'm not sure. I guess the question would be to whom does the league owe an explanation? I would think certainly the complainants in that case to start with, and who can kind of like there's I'm not sure is there a legal remedy to enforce some transparency here? This is it's a private business. There were presumably some confidentiality provisions in terms of how they harvested those emails. Like, is there a way into this story, Amy, and from the outside?
I don't know the answer to that. Certainly some of those emails would be protected by attorney-client privilege. There might be other emails. There should be other emails that would not be protected. But short of a court ordering the dissemination or the disclosure of the emails, there's no obligation to do so. Now, that doesn't mean that someone might not, a court order or a governmental order or some such thing. But short of that, I'm not aware of any remedy such that the emails could become public.
How does the NFL go about healing for people who now, maybe have a different view of the NFL than they might have before those emails were leaked?
Well, I have a different view on this than many people. I've heard many people say, let's move on, let's move forward, let's move past that. I don't think we should. And this is not directed simply at the Raiders or simply at the NFL or at any business in particular. But as a society as a whole, we move past things so quickly now. Something that is a huge news story, breaking news, and it's a huge news story on day one. 3 days, 4 days later, we've all collectively as a society, not every single person, but as a generalization, moved on past a story. I don't think we should move on past this. Yes, games have to be played. Of course, people can enjoy those games. But we need to focus on that which was contained in these emails, which showed us the thoughts and the heart, gave us an insight into the hearts and minds of the people who were party to these emails. We've got a problem. And again, it's not just the National Football League. It's not just businesses as a whole. But societally, we have a problem, and we have got to find a way to fix it.
Boy, that's a big ask. And you're right. But that's a huge ask, isn't it?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. I mean, is it a huge problem to ask people to be good, decent human beings? Is it a huge problem? Should we not expect people to treat one another fairly? We got to figure this out. We got to figure this out as a society as a whole. This is not simply an NFL problem, and I'm not looking to give the league or any team a pass. But we've got a problem, and we've got to fix it. So when I say we shouldn't move on so quickly, of course I think people can enjoy games and should enjoy games. But we can't just look past this.
Yeah. Well, how prevalent do you think this thought is through NFL front offices, through the people who are in charge here? How many John Grudens are there out there in the NFL? Understanding that it's been a moment since you've been in an NFL front office, but your understanding of that type of thought, is it all that prevalent? Is it just overwhelmingly prevalent right now?
Well, I certainly can't quantify it to any exact number. I can say, I'll tell you what I believe. It has been a number of years since I've been part of the league. Do I believe that the men involved in this exchange of emails are the only ones with these views? Of course not. Do I believe that this is a view that is prevalent throughout the league? No, I don't. And again, there's a very wide range between prevalent throughout the league and limited to a couple of people. Do more than a couple of people hold these views? I would absolutely assume that to be the case. Is it widespread? Does everyone in the league believe these views? No, I don't believe that's the case. And I don't know the point in really trying to quantify it down to a number, because if these views are held by anyone, that's too many people. So I don't know what the number is. I do know there are some very, very good people in the National Football League. I know that this is not a view held by all of them. But again, it doesn't really matter how many hold the views, because if any hold the views, that's too many.
Did you run into those views when you were in the league, when you cracked that boys club? I'm not saying everybody, but was that familiar to you from that world?
I did not hear views like that expressed by John during my years in the league. Those were not views that I heard an overwhelming amount of.
Amy, we appreciate you taking the time for us today. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks, Amy.
There's Amy Trask, former Raiders CEO. So this thing is not going to end.
Oh, no.
As much as the Washington football team would like you to think about Sean Taylor and the retiring of his jersey on Sunday.
Could we just talk about what an outrageous act of cynicism that is? Can we just, do you want to go there at all? Like, could there be anything worse than the way they've done that and the timing of that?
The poor family of Sean Taylor, who now they had 4 days to get themselves, like, in the history of retiring jerseys in North American pro sports, has anything ever been done of this ilk that is so obvious a smokescreen as, hey, I know you're talking about the emails and I know we're fine, $10 million and all that. Look over here. We're finally doing the thing that was so obvious that people were clamoring for years. We're doing it at this moment to distract you from the other things that are happening.
Well, it's appalling. Like, it's appalling, and it tells you, if you didn't extrapolate from those emails, and I hope more of them come out. I'm not sure they're going to. But what kind of a place the Washington football team is? What kind of a culture is it operated under? That gesture, that again horribly cynical, appalling gesture, tells you everything you need to know. I can't think of a worse response,
honestly,
and a more transparently awful response.
And what do you do if you're a fan of that team and a fan of Sean Taylor? You have no choice. It's almost like they put you in a box where it's like, man, well, this is it. They're not going to do this again, right? Like, the Sean Taylor's number is getting retired. He's being honored at this football stadium once, and I guess we all have to pretend like it's on the up and up, and that it's only one thing and not the other.
I guess. I guess. I feel for his family, as you said, suddenly being thrown into that situation. And what do you do you say no? We won't participate in this. I don't think you probably do that. I think you want him acknowledged and honored in that way. You wanted it for a long time. But if you trace that team's history back to, what happened to Sean Taylor and the way they reacted to it initially, like, just... Yeah, go back and do a little read on this one and then add it to the timing now, and you can draw your own conclusions about what kind of people we're talking about here.
Yeah, not great. They're really not. The Snyders, or Dan Snyder in particular, and former President Bruce Allen, and we alluded to the dribs and drabs, like the emails that come out every day, and I don't know, I haven't checked my Twitter feed. I'm sure there was another one today. Like, it feels like every day there's going to be something. I don't know what to think, because my initial... We talked about this, I guess it was on Monday, when we did our whatever 20 minutes thinking this thing out, talking it out, that it really just felt so obvious that this was a Roger Goodell, you know, holding a grudge against a guy, choosing one thing to leak, and that was it, to embarrass and have John Gruden eventually dismissed as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. The stuff that's coming out now, though, is not that.
No, and it's getting a little close to home, right, Joe? The Jeff Pasch stuff, right? So Bruce Allen and Jeff Pasch, chief counsel for the league, right-hand man to Roger Goodell, seem to be very chummy with Bruce Allen. That's what we're going to find out here is, it. Well, again, if this stuff ever comes out, and I am skeptical that much of it's going to come out, I hope that the women who filed the complaints against the team, that their legal team can force some of this stuff to come out. I'm not sure anybody else is going to be, but I think what you're going to see is a web here, right? It's not four guys, and it's definitely not one guy in John Gruden. You know, he was one of four in that email chain who all, and again, you know, they were all, as Amy said, you don't send that stuff to people.
No.
Unless they're kindred spirits, right? You don't just fire that out there into the blue and see how people are going to react to it. You know how they're going to react to it. You're all on the same page.
No, the most damning stuff about this Jeff Pasch stuff isn't the, hey, you know, you're going to have your fine rescinded for fudging the injury report. Like, who really cares about that stuff? It's the stuff about the women and the photos that are shared that were proven to have been shared between Bruce Allen and John Gruden and Daniel Snyder, probably involved, topless photos of cheerleaders who had no knowledge that Jeff Pasch said, I know that you are on it and would not condone something untoward. The guy that was under investigation, that eventually his franchise had to pay a $10 million fine, he was given the benefit of the doubt for something that he actually did do.
And that sound like a lawyerly sentence to you in any way?
It doesn't.
Does that sound like a lawyerly sentence? Kind of, yeah, we know you got this under control. Don't sweat it. Don't sweat it. Yeah, it's a toxic, horrible culture, obviously. You know, and I think it's the toxic, horrible culture around that team. And the question are going to be where those tendrils go and how many places they go. And to some degree, they obviously go into the league head office, at least on a buddy-buddy level. It is Pandora's box for sure. I'm not sure we're ever going to know the totality of it. But, you know, sometimes what you can imagine is worse than what you would actually find out.
You're right.
I just assume they're all yucking it up, you know, don't you?
100%. And nobody more than Dan Snyder, who's seeming like, how, if you're Dan Snyder, how do you not feel untouchable right now?
Yeah.
You paid a $10 million fine, which is like, he finds that in his couch, like on a daily basis, that you have been basically unscathed. And even now, like, you're coming under fire. I know he's not doing the day-to-day operations. His wife is in charge. But you know who's getting the slings and arrows for the most part? Is the guy that was the president of the team when all this was happening. Bruce Allen's taking all the bullets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just unbelievable what has probably actually already happened, maybe still happening, and that, I don't know, I'm hopeful it won't be, but at this point feels like it's going to go unpunished.
Well, I think Dan Snyder was, you know, largely hated by the fans of that team, right?
Already, yeah.
Yeah, it was already for football reasons and other reasons. You know, he defended till he absolutely could no longer defend it, the racist nickname of his team, despite, you know, widespread outcry, you know, even people who, you know, might have found other nicknames, debating points. Not many people felt that way about the nickname of the Washington football team, right? It seemed pretty clear cut that it was a bad idea and that it was time to get rid of it. And Dan Snyder fought that and fought that and fought that. And you're right. Like, it, wealth, power, owning an NFL team, you can skate over a whole bunch of stuff, it would appear, and pay a fine here and there and get away with it, right? You can get away with just about anything, it would appear.
Sounds depressing. I hope you're wrong, but it really feels like right.
Well, and that's what I meant when I phrased it wrong when I had Amy on there. But you're not just talking about kind of writing, the business practices of one organization or kind of tweaking it around the edges. You know, what she's talking about is changing the world.
Well, changing ownership in the most valuable sports franchises in North America and like up there amongst the most valuable in the world, an NFL sports franchise, even one that has performed as poorly as the Washington football team, what, they're worth $2-3 billion? Because mm-hmm. that's like Dan Snyder, unless he's going to be forcibly removed from that post, because there's no more negative PR that he can, unless some of these emails come out. Like, we're talking about generations from now. When Dan Snyder dies, then we can talk about maybe some change in the thought process.
But could you imagine a Donald Sterling situation in the National Football League?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. There's right. the so
that's you know, the one.
Yeah. Well, in a league where the players have tremendous degree of power, you know, which is good, and he was forced out. Right. He was forced to divest himself of a franchise. Could you imagine that happening in the National Football League?
I don't want to do this for too much longer, but now, like, I'm thinking about the possibility of that type of scandal being revealed to be what resulted in the $10 million fine. Like, something, obviously not apples to apples here, but something that is as along the lines as abhorrent as that, that was what resulted in a $10 million fine, and it coming to light that the NFL was aware of that, that they protected it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happens to the league if that happens.
Well, that's a really good question. You know, and what has generally protected the league is that people want their Sunday football and they're willing to overlook all kinds of stuff. You know, baseball got rid of Marge Schott, right? And baseball was, you know, had some horrible characters in baseball. And, it, you know, now Marge Schott was an extreme case. And basketball in much more recent history did get rid of Donald Sterling. You know, with and the players force that essentially, right?
Yeah.
The people who are the value in the system enforced that. Who forces out an owner in the NFL?
Well, and in this case, in this thought experiment, Roger Goodell would have to go too, because he knew about it.
Yeah, I think the notion, complicit may be a little strong, mm-hmm. but aware.
Yeah. Yeah, he's maybe not read all 650,000 emails. He knows the Coles notes.
I'm thinking he knows the Coles notes. That's exactly correct. Yes, I believe so. And he was quite happy to have oversee an investigation that produced no written report, produced an oral report. How often does that happen, by the way, where you do it? You go out and go through 650,000 emails, and you do an oral report. You just kind of go through it, you know.
Guy probably needs some lozenges after that thing.
Yeah, and that's it, and it's all done, and there we go. I think he understood what the process was. I think he oversaw the process. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure if that's complicit or I think it's probably just what's a step below complicit? You know, but
yeah.
I say aware.
Aware.
Definitely aware. Like it. Definitely aware.
Yep. Yeah, not head in the sand, that's for sure.
No.
All right. When we come back, there's a bunch of stories I want to get to, including this quote from Tom Brady that actually makes me want to hit my head into the desk here. Also, this rumor that the Oakland A's could be headed to Vegas. There's a bunch of stories I want to get to, and that is coming up next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Also yesterday, Tampa Bay Buccaneers improved to 5-1 with a 28-22 win over the Philadelphia Eagles. And Tom Brady, ho-hum, another couple of touchdown passes. QB rating of 102. He's a million. And he wants to play until he's 2 million. Stephen?
Yes.
And I get that. And I don't doubt it. Here's the thing. Before I say what I'm about to say,
okay,
I do not doubt it, because what he's doing right now is impossible. It's impossible what Tom Brady is doing. But here's what I would like. You know what? Maybe let me read the quote first, and then I'll tell you what I would like. This is what he told Andrea Kramer and Hannah Storm. I really think I can play as long as I want. I could literally play until I'm 50 or 55 if I wanted to. I don't think I will, obviously. My physical body won't be the problem. I think it'll just be I'm missing too much of my life and my family. Okay, so maybe, I'll get that out of the way. Maybe. I want you to admit that aging is a thing, that one day, Tom Brady, you will die. Like, your physical body will let you down at some point, because this is as crazy a quote as I've ever heard. Okay, maybe. Like, the hubris involved in that.
Yes. Yes, it's true. You know, yes, transcending one's physical body, you know, is generally something people talk about, you know, in, you know, some form of religion or cult or something, right? Yes. It's not.
That's what it sounds like, but honestly.
It does sound a little like that, doesn't it?
But if signing up for the cult means that you get to do what he does at 44 and maybe at 50 and maybe at 55, I guess it's worth it.
His life looks okay, actually. I got to tell you. It's got good elements to it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just so bizarre. I just want him to at least admit that there is a possibility, you know, that one day he'll wake up and feel like a 44-year-old. It just feels like that part. And I guess you don't get to be what you are at 44 if you ever let those thoughts creep in.
Yeah, it's, you know, like it's like Ben Roethlisberger looks like he's 112 now, right?
Correct.
Right? So in his physical body, he's not going to overcome his physical body at this point, right? And,
yes.
You know, and he's considerably younger than this guy.
Guess what? Everybody on the planet has eventually gotten to that point.
I guess that's true,
that
right?
Point.
Drew Brees, you know, kind of couldn't transcend his physical body, right? Then, you know, was pretty good right up until the end, but then he kind of got old. But, you know, do you watch Brady? Like, I didn't watch a ton of that game last night. I watched enough of it to realize that, you know, Philly's pretty bad, and mm-hmm. I know they came back in the end, but I like watching fans in Philly boo their team. It's always fun. But, you know, Brady just looks so comfortable and kind of doing whatever he wanted, and there was no real pass rush to worry about. And,
no.
You know, and occasionally you'd take three steps to one side to avoid it and, you know, see the field, saw everything downfield, threw the ball, throws the ball fine, his arm's fine. You know, arm's really good.
Yeah.
So what's going to go on him?
I guess. I mean, one hit, I suppose, and we've seen that happen to him before. He's missed an entire season, but...
And that was kind of a fluke hit, remember, right? That was when a guy kind of rolled up on
him. They changed the rule since then.
You can't
hit a quarterback that way anymore, Steven.
So he's smart about, you know, he doesn't just get walloped. Like, you know, like, again, Ben Roethlisberger accepted a lot of contact in his career, correct? Big,
right.
Huge, strong dude, wasn't afraid, would hang in forever and ever and ever, and then get plowed. Tom Brady's never done that.
No.
He's smart. He's really smart. He kind of just takes a step to the side. And, you know, if he has to fall down, he falls down and gets up and plays again. He's having the best year of his career right now.
It's insane. He's thrown more touchdown passes in his 40s than in his 20s.
So perhaps there's hope for all of us.
I suppose. I should just be more unwavering in my beliefs. Like, that's the rule here, or the lesson here.
Yes, if you believed, you could do... No, you can't. You won't be able to fly. Okay, it's not going to happen. You can't just will yourself into things.
You're the man to talk to when it comes to franchises moving in Major League Baseball.
Yes,
talk about unwavering. Nobody's been more unwavering than your belief that the Tampa Bay Rays are going to Montreal.
I am unwavering in that. I refuse to waver. Okay. I will not waver until. Well, no, I'm not going to waver. There's nothing. No, nothing will make me waver on that one.
Okay, what is your belief that the Oakland A's are moving to Las Vegas? Because Arash Markazi the other day said the Oakland A's are expected to announce a handful of finalists for a potential $1 billion stadium in Las Vegas after the World Series. A's president has made at least 6 trips to Vegas looking for potential sites for the team's future home.
Done deal.
That's it.
Yeah, done deal. Because the Oakland thing is, it's not salvageable, right? Like,
no.
We've been talking about that for these many years, right? Before the sewage rose, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes, the players don't like having poop, like, rain down on
it's
their
funny
heads.
That they're funny that way. That's a done deal. To the point where it's going to happen, I think, within 2 years, and they might have to play in the AAA stadium in Vegas for a year, it sounds like. There is a AAA stadium. It's not the one. When I heard that, I thought, well, I went to the AAA stadium in Vegas because it's where the Jays, they were, the 51s.
The 51s, yeah.
Right? And it was, you know, it was not nice, and it was in a really bad part of town, and it was really hot, shockingly. You know, baseball's an outdoor game, but they built a new AAA stadium there, I guess, which is just off the strip, like everything. And it's apparently very nice. So they may have to play a season there, but they're out of Oakland and everybody's going to Vegas, aren't they? Right? It seems, you know, this is one of these, it's amazing. All the years when it was about, boy, you know, would a league allow a team to go to Vegas, number one, and B, would it work because Vegas isn't a sports town, it's a whatever town, right? And it's, people work, 24 hours around the clock. It's a casino town. It's a tourist town. You know, other than the CFL and that bold experiment, when the CFL went to Las Vegas, they were ahead. They're just ahead of their time.
Oh, man.
They were just ahead of their time.
Was that the anthem singer?
Yes.
Who sang O Tannenbaum for O Canada?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And that was the one where they played the Ticats and both teams were bankrupt. And
Yes.
Remember who was the coach of Vegas said that the biggest question was whether there'd be a they'd have a fight over the coin that they used for the coin toss because they both were broke. Nick Meletti was the owner of the Las Vegas Posse. He was going to he had a brilliant scheme to take the team public. Which might have been illegal the way he framed it, just a guess. But they were just ahead of their time, right? But you know they had minor league hockey in Vegas, right? I think I saw Radek Blanc playing there. Kind of, there you go.
Radek Blanc.
Surprising that didn't turn everybody onto hockey in Vegas, you know?
Senators legend.
Forever and ever. So, you know, would anyone allow teams near the scourge that is gambling, the moral rot that is gambling? Because, of course, you know, God knows what would happen. Players would be throwing games left and right. Could you make it viable there because of the nature of the economy? You know, and, well, of course, we all love gambling now. Gambling's good.
That's right.
And including us here.
Yep.
And number two, Vegas, you know, there's 2 million people in Las Vegas, 2 million plus. It is a place, right? It's not just a strip. It's a place where people live and they want to do things. And, you know, everybody gets it now. You know, like hats off to the National Hockey League for being ahead. And showing, you know, what it could be instantly, right? Instantly, oh, yeah, that thing right turned away. On, right? And it's not just about, you know, people from Calgary going there on vacation to watch the Flames.
No.
Like, it's there, right?
For sure.
And it was their team. So, you know, obviously the Raiders. But I don't know, you know, baseball, you know, they play baseball in Phoenix. It's really hot in Phoenix. You have, you know, an indoor or a retractable roof. So you'd have to do something. You know, I've been in Las Vegas in July. It's very, very warm.
Yeah, I've never been because
you wouldn't want to do it. You know, you have the soles in your shoes. But Rash and I were down there for McGregor Mayweather, and we were doing stand-ups outside the arena in the afternoon, and you could feel the soles of your shoes stuck to the concrete.
Oh, but it's a dry heat, Stephen.
Yeah, it was not that dry. Well, it was like an oven's a dry heat. I guess it would be like it. So yeah, but no. So yeah, but that's the long answer. But yeah, it's done. Yeah, baseball. The Oakland A's will be the Vegas whatevers. Man.
You are unequivocal in your comments about Major League Baseball franchises moving.
It's that one's easy. That one's easy. The Montreal one's a little more complicated because of this whole split city thing, but it's still, you know, sometimes the writing's just on the wall.
I had a little bit of a follow-up to that because we have this really bizarre offseason upcoming in Major League Baseball, depressing potentially. And I'm not just talking about the Blue Jays losing a couple of free agents. Like, the CBA expires December 1st, and I'm hopeful that these two sides can make nice. It hasn't been their want to do that recently, even in the middle of a pandemic when they're the only sport that could come back and play. They eventually figured it out and played a 60-game thing, but lost a lot of goodwill when they could have come back at the beginning of July. July 4th would have been a nice return to action for Major League Baseball.
Yes, it would have.
But they couldn't get it together, so whatever. But there's going to be a new world order in Major League Baseball. And these things that you're talking about, whether it's Montreal getting the Rays or the A's going to Vegas, these are a couple of years down the line. So maybe this isn't a fair thought experiment for this offseason, but how about like divisional realignment, especially when I think this new CBA will include Universal DH.
It's got to, I think, right?
I think so. It almost happened last time, and you know, we saw it in the 60-game season. It just seems like it's such a give back. The players want it.
Players want. No one's really against it.
No, nobody's against it. And no, sorry. There's a guy that's listening right now.
Double switch.
Who's got his double switch jersey, and he loves the double switch. He's against it. But if you got Universal DH, you can. There's not, you don't even need a lag time to like prepare a franchise, a roster, so that you can move from the American League to the National League. We could throw this thing back into the blender, and you don't think Major League Baseball would like to see the Yankees and Mets in the same division playing 19 times a year, the Cubs and the White Sox, and I think maybe you think ahead and you keep the Rays and the Blue Jays in the same division, but I don't know. I wonder if headed towards a reckoning when it comes to divisional realignment in baseball.
It makes a ton of sense. And I know people are out there going to say, no, it's always been. Well, no, baseball's not always been anything,
no.
Right? Like, yeah, there were two separate, they were really two separate leagues at one point. But, you know, teams have moved back and forth between leagues and the configuration has changed and the divisions have changed and the playoff format has changed. Like, everything's changed, right? All kinds of things have changed here. So why not, right? Like, because we're going to have a brutal winter. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
It's going to be ugly, brinksmanship, right? Like they're going to take it right to the wire. There will be some kind of a a shutdown, probably a lockout, because that's what we get, which means no business, right? So, I mean, business will stop. So you'll have a little interim period here between the end of the World Series and the end of the collective agreement, and then I think baseball business is going to shut down for a while. And then there'll be a frantic point once they have a new collective agreement where it will start again, and we'll see if we can get 162 games in. But they now know they don't have to play 162 games because it doesn't matter. It's arbitrary, right? They played 60 last year.
Yep.
So that's not exactly comforting either. But yes, there will be baseball again at some point next year. But I think, look, I think it's, you're right, Ben. Like, why not? Both sides here want to max profit, correct? It's funny, yes. Funny that way. You're not going to have a cap. Isn't there, you know, no one's, nothing's, nothing out of this is going to turn it into a cap system. It's still going to be a free market.
Yeah. If they were pushing for a cap, we might, it might be 5 years until we see would, baseball
yeah,
we, again.
I might, yeah, I don't even want to think about that. Like I might, yeah, that's, I'll, yeah. I'd be long gone by the time if, yeah, that one's not happening. So it's not going to be a cap. There'll be some kind of luxury tax mechanism, and there'll probably be earlier free agency for players and, you know, then a change in, like a bunch of stuff that, you know, as a, from a fan's point of view, honest to God, it's not going to make much difference.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if I was running baseball and I had formed a new partnership with the union, part of that new partnership would be, okay, how are we going to max out here, boys? You know, like let's, why don't we just rethink this whole thing and try and to max out, because gate revenue matters in this league. If you're going to have 162 game season, you know, we've kind of, you know, in some areas, like we've become more of a regional local television attraction than we are a national television attraction. We've lost some of that stuff. How can we put a little bit of sizzle back into this? And I would put everything on the table. Like, what's the diff? Like, yeah. You know, tradition's still going to be tradition. Like, you've still, yeah. You still got a game that was played in the 19th century, and the teams, you've got teams that go back, you know, decades and decades.
You got 90 feet, you got 60 feet, 6 inches.
Yeah, you got some oldie schooly stadiums that, you know, you want to keep for some reason, museum stadiums. But why not? You know, yeah. Like, and think, like, well, give me your, you know, like you said, that why, you know, the Mets and the Yankees in the division, sure. Like, you, like the Jays ended up, you know, with the, they loved being with Boston and the Yankees because of the gate.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it was all about. It used to be about the Tigers.
Well, here's, so somebody actually tweeted at me it was a while ago now, if we were going to reimagine divisions and you were doing it in proximity, here's the division the Blue Jays might find themselves in the same division as the Tigers, which mm-hmm. would be great. I mean, proximity. Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and the Washington Nationals. Now, it would stink not to have Montreal.
Get those Rays in there, the X-rays. Yes, sir.
But think about, oh, you're upset because the Blue Jays won 91 games, didn't go to the playoffs? Imagine with that sad sack of characters. That would be a dream, not to mention the number of games that you could go in 2 hours, drive from the city of Toronto to go see the Blue Jays and Tigers. And I'm not saying that this is, if you were just going by, like, that's the type of stuff that we're talking about, being in the same division as the Tigers. You're right. That used to be.
It was awesome. Yeah.
It was a historic rivalry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to bring up 87, but yeah.
Yeah, don't bring up 87. But it was great. But you in that group, the Jays would be the big dogs payroll-wise, too. Again, presuming that they continue on the path that they're on. You know, look at those teams and what they spend. Like, I don't know what where the Tigers will go in the post-Illich era, how much, obviously he spent a ton trying to win that World Series. But the rest of those teams.
Cleveland's, I think, dead last in payroll.
Yeah.
The Pirates are like probably second to dead last.
Yeah.
Now the Learners in Washington, they spent.
The Learners did spend and they won, right? But but you're not, you know, you would be one of the big dogs, if not the biggest dog in that group, and money payroll matters in that sport. So I think there's no reason why it wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to get there, you know, we're going to have to, you know, fly through a couple of thunderstorms here and then see if it brings everyone together.
Well, yeah. And you wonder if like they're too busy worrying about, you know, cutting up the pie to decide, you know, and also, you know, you were changing divisions. I don't know if this is an off-season thing. I'm just saying that, like, down the road, the idea of divisional realignment seems like there's a lot of sense to be made there.
Well, I think there's no, I don't have an argument against it. You know, again, the argument against it is some version of tradition. But if you actually know the history of baseball, like, it's malleable. It's way more malleable than you think.
100%. American League Championship Series starts tonight. Game one, as we mentioned, it is Chris Sale on the mound for the Boston Red Sox. I'm the Alex Cora thing is baffling to me a little bit because you talk, well, first of all, he was in media. So there's a lot of people that you talk to, including John Morosi, who loved working with him in media. And he seems like a good dude, just generally.
I can only say the only time I've spent any time with him was when we were down doing the Charlie Montoya thing in Puerto Rico. We went to Alex Cora's house, sat down with him for a good chunk of a day. He was awesome. Yeah, he's a charming guy and he's really smart.
He's a cheater.
He is.
Convicted. Like,
correct.
But also, beyond that, cheated again. So that's the Astros were convicted cheaters, and they have a very tainted World Series that they won in 2017. Alex Cora was the bench coach, and he had to serve a year-long suspension.
Yes, he did.
For participating.
That's correct.
In the sign-stealing scandal involving the Houston Astros in 2017. Next year, he was the manager of the Red Sox.
And?
They stole signs again.
They did.
and the only guy that lost his job was, I guess, the video guy or something.
Well, that's the way it always is, right?
Like, well, it's, yeah. Yeah. You generally.
Know, yeah, during the cocaine scandal of the 80s, it wasn't the actual players that used cocaine. It was the dealer that they all outed, right? It's what happens, right? It's, you know, look, AJ Hinch is working in baseball. Alex Cora is working in baseball. All is forgiven.
It is just, it's just mind-bending to me. And then you look at some of the moves and what he's able to get out of a team that, okay, were they the fifth best team in the American League East like they were in a 60-game season? Yeah, probably not. Like, you look at the hitters and Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts and J.D. Martinez, those guys are good players. Mm-hmm. And Nathan Eovaldi's okay. They got a lot out of Nick Pivetta. They have, like, just, if the manager of the year is the guy that makes the most out of the least, He's got to be in there. It's just, this guy cheats. He's done it twice, and that gets forgotten. I guess if you're a nice guy and you have a relationship with the media, and you know what?
It probably doesn't hurt.
Enough time has passed that this is just not a topic of conversation.
Yeah, well, we had Joe Siddle in here earlier tonight. I don't think it's passed for him.
Yeah, you're right.
he didn't seem all that forgiving. And I think the rest of us, well, some of us, I guess, you just kind of grow calluses, right? And then off you go. But, you know, you're not wrong about anything. But if I wanted to win baseball games, I would hire Alex Cora to manage my team.
That's it. Well, right? I mean, his history of success. And the Red Sox obviously felt strong enough in him that they let him go, said goodbye, but you're coming back. As soon as you're capable of coming back, you're coming back. Like, the passion that organization had for Alex Cora, and you can't fault him, because look at the success he's having with that organization.
Well, and this year, like, it you know, look at their rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Look at their bullpen. We talked, you know, you mentioned, like, you know, Matt Barnes was the world's greatest closer for half a season and then fell off. You know, he's not on the postseason roster. Like, you know, how did they build a bullpen? You know, we've talked about it with the Jays, how tricky it can be to build a bullpen. They seem to have built two this year. They do have great offensive players in that lineup, but I'm not sure they have a better lineup offensively than the New York Yankees or the Toronto Blue Jays or the Tampa Rays, and yet they're the ones standing. No, they look. I think he's a legit manager. I think Kevin Cash is going to be the American League Manager of the Year,
probably.
But I'm not sure that Alex Cora shouldn't be the American League Manager of the Year.
No, it's a great point. Maybe Leafs with the day off today, their first off day after back-to-back games yesterday and then Wednesday. 1-1 is a horrible start in both games, really. They got off to a horrible first 10 minutes against the Montreal Canadiens. They survived that. They bounce back. They score two goals. They win a very ugly-looking game. They get filled in the first 20 minutes yesterday against a Senators team that maybe was, like you mentioned yesterday, might have some juice after signing Brady Tkachuk to that monster extension.
And he came out. He did
what was it? It kind of reminded me of the Roger Clemens thing, right? Where he got signed and there's Susan Waldman talking. And there's Roger. And yeah, that was Brady Tkachuk who waved to his adoring fans.
Yep. He did that. But they had lots of jump. They had loads of jump. The Leafs made it interesting and close. But they don't have Austin Matthews. They don't have their best player. I guess we can say that. We should say that, right?
Yes.
But they have not. Now, there's been some weird results, and there have been weird results in the league already.
I guess. And yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning almost lost to the Detroit Red Wings yesterday before they roared back with an incredible finish to that game.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some weird stuff has happened. Montreal went down to Buffalo and got, or at home and got rolled by Buffalo. Was that at home or in Buffalo?
No, I think it was in Buffalo.
In Buffalo. That makes, because otherwise there'd be you know, there would be much, there'd be smoke rising from the East. But yeah, they got, you know, they got rolled by a team that everybody thinks could be the worst team in the league this year.
Well, I just, the narrative surrounding this team is starting to take shape, right? And you're right. They're without Austin Matthews, who has only been ruled out of these first three games. So maybe he returns even as early as Monday against the New York Rangers on Rogers' hometown hockey. But this is, this was supposed to be where this team makes hay. And they have a win. They're only 1-1. But I don't know where the Montreal Canadiens are going to finish at the end of this season, considering the number of players that they have lost and the players of significance mm-hmm. that they have lost. Now you're down to half of the goaltending tandem that you thought you would have at the beginning of the season. Again, we don't have an update on Peter Mrazek and how significant that injury is, but it's a groin injury, and for a goalie, usually means you're out at least, I would say, 3 weeks. And Jack Campbell had the same thing last year. He missed a month. This is, I mean, you lose on Saturday to, and maybe Ottawa's already improved. You look at the way they finished last season. If that was maybe an 82-game season, you're talking about a team that's knocking on the door of the postseason. They get Brady Tkachuk maybe in the lineup. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not panic time, and I'm not going to say Saturday's a must-win, but there's already some narratives forming with this team through two games of the regular season because they have not looked impressive.
There have been moments when the power play looked, you know, even last night, the power play looked really good, you know, in terms of kind of possession and skill and all that stuff that you would assume. You know, we've talked about the mystery of the Leafs power play last year at times. There have been stretches, I guess, but no, they haven't leapt out of the gate here. They don't look like they're a class above the two teams they played. And that's kind of was the assumption going into the season.
Here's the good news. The Toronto Maple Leafs player of the Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt, Michael Bunting.
Yeah. How's he doing?
Well, he's drawn penalties in both games. Stephen, see, I talked about this being a real thing. He drew another penalty yesterday.
Underrated skill.
Yeah, it is an absolutely underrated skill. So he's been relatively good, and you know what? Nick Ritchie has not been good, so there's talk of Michael Bunting getting an even greater role.
It's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Leafs need to create offense, though, because I think the narrative for some people who didn't pay attention to this team was that they're still a leaky defensive team, but like I've said ad nauseum, they fixed that by and large last season. That wasn't their problem in the seven-game series against the Montreal Canadiens. They got one goal between Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So creating offense would be a crucial thing for this Toronto Maple Leafs team. All right, before we go, Buffalo Bills also with a big game on Monday night against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, and it's, but, you know, and but it's, and Derrick Henry and all of that, right? But mm-hmm. boy, are you, look at that Bills schedule, right? It's like there's not, they're going to win. How many games are they going to win this year? You know, they're like still kind of trying to figure out how they lost that first one.
Well, they're going to go 6-0 in the AFC East, so there's six.
Yeah.
Their toughest game is the Buccaneers, but who knows how important that game is to the Bucs. The second most difficult is maybe the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, I mean, pick a week over these first five, and you get a different Saints team, one that limits the Packers to 3 points in week one, or one that, you know, Jameis Winston's throwing the ball to the opposite team. Mm-hmm. On a consistent basis.
Come on, say it.
The Buffalo Bills are one of two favorites in the AFC. I will say that I'm not putting the stake through the heart of the Kansas City Chiefs yet, but if they lose to Washington on Sunday, although they'll have that boost of Sean Taylor's jersey retirement in Washington. But yeah, if you let Taylor Heineke throw all over you, then, okay, your defensive problems are legit.
So you're saying it's the Chargers, right? The Chargers and the Bills? The Bills and the Chargers?
We'll see. This weekend could
16-1, the 16-1 Buffalo Bills?
Yeah. Okay, let's go with that. And on a 16-game winning streak after that week one loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, everybody, enjoy the weekend. We'll be back on Monday. This has been the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.